All right, welcome back to Extra Innings, filling in for FP Santangelo on late night. Bill Lasky here, Giants losers in Arizona. First game of a three-game series. They lost 7-0, 7 runs, 11 hits for Arizona. No runs, 3 hits for the San Francisco Giants. And I'm so glad I get to talk to my buddy now. And I talked to great callers all night today, and I appreciate all the calls. So let's bring him in. Fan-sided writer and editor, and he's around the foghorn. Jeff Young, how are you tonight?
Well, I'm doing well, Bill. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, I appreciate it. I don't know how many whiskeys you had. You know, I know Twitter was telling you to have a couple whiskeys before you came on. So, you know, I had a couple callers say that. So, you know what? I just hope you didn't have too many.
Yeah, I mean, it sounded like a great idea, right? I don't know if I'd be able to put some... I don't know if I'd be able to put coherent sentences together, but it sounds like a great idea. So I appreciate the recommendation.
Well, I think everybody's kind of talking about the same flavor of this baseball team. This baseball team, since the second half started, has just started in a rut, and they can't get out of it. And they really don't have anything salvaged here. In you know, 5 games, they've had some ups and downs. What have you seen since the All-Star break?
Yeah, I mean, it's been mostly downs for the most part since the All-Star break. I think a couple of things stand out when you look at the Giants right now. You know, there have been a lot of instances where they've had 2 strike counts against hitters and they haven't been able to put them away. So that's something that kind of sticks out. That was a theme during the Dodgers series. And I know it was mentioned earlier, but, you know, the fact that they gave up so many 2-out runs to the Dodgers as well, I mean, that's one of those things where it feels like you really have the inning kind of in a good position, and then you give up a couple of hits here and there, and you know, the next thing you know, you've given up 2 or 3 runs. So, I mean, that's one of those things that really can hurt a team's confidence, and, you know, that's kind of what we're seeing right now. The Giants aren't really playing a confident brand of baseball. They're just, you know, it's across the board. They're not hitting well. Their bullpen's not getting it done. The defense, you know, it's been an issue all year. And it continues to be an issue. They're just making a lot of mistakes out there.
And the mistakes just get costly. You know, I talked about it earlier in the show about the mental mistakes, overthrowing cutoffs, getting picked off at first base. And these things just keep going, getting worse. And you want to say, hey, stop. You know, we got to think about this baseball a little bit more. Austin Slater's a great center fielder. He ran that ball down. It looked like he just got a little alligator arm at the end there, and it cost him. I think he knew he was going to come to the wall. That ball was hit very well. But that was a tough play. I give him a tough play on that. But the overthrows, trying to throw guys out at home plate, you're not going to throw out Geraldo Perdomo from second base. The guy's got speed, man. You know, and he overthrows him, and next thing you know, you got Rojas sitting at second base. And you're like, why? Why? You can't do that. And that's the kind of stuff that irritates me, as a pitcher especially, because I just gave up a hit, and now you got my guy back at second base. So, you know what? Those things have to be cleaned up, Jeff.
Yeah, and I have to wonder, and I haven't heard this brought up yet, unless I missed it, but I have to wonder if the team's not only missing, you know, Buster Posey's presence, because obviously they are, right? You can't really replace a guy like Buster Posey, but I wonder how much the team is missing Ron Wotus's impact. I mean, I know he worked pretty extensively with the infielders in addition to being a third base coach, and it felt like, you know, when he worked with infielders, you'd see improvement from them, and you know, we're just not really seeing overall improvement as the season progresses with a lot of guys on defense. And it's leading to a lot of mistakes, you know, guys overthrowing cutoff men, really not setting their feet when they get to the ball and you know, not getting a good throw out there. It's just mistakes all around.
And you also see some good plays. VR made a great play today on that ball, that bullet down the third baseline. You do see some good plays. I mean, when you look at Estrada's played very good shortstop since Crawford's out. We're not going to be Debbie Downer on all of them, because there has been some good baseball. But what's happening is when you get in these tight games, nothing game today, and then Garcia comes in and he had nothing. And like I'm saying, what did you think about Junis? Do you think Junis should have went a little longer?
Yeah, I know he wasn't totally built up, and, you know, it felt like he probably had a couple of bullets left in him. One thing I like about Junis is that he's really pitch efficient. He really attacks the strike zone. I think today he threw a total of 62 pitches through 4 1/3 innings. So I'm not sure what his arm strength is at the moment, but it felt like he probably had a couple of pitches left in him. You know, he didn't really pitch too deep in any one inning. You know, he works quickly. He's efficient. He doesn't really get stuck in long counts against batters. I mean, it felt like he had a couple of batters left, and you know, he was really pitching well against the against this Diamondbacks lineup, and you know, seeing this, they chuck him out. Harlan Garcia gave it up, and it just felt like, you know, even though it was 2-0 by the end of that inning, it just felt like it was like an insurmountable kind of.
It felt like it was like 5 or 6-0, didn't it? It just seemed. You looked up and you said, "Oh, it's only 2-0." It felt like it was like 4 or 5-0 because it was just hit after hit, you know. But you're absolutely right about him, and I you know, I scored the game. You know, I always do that when I'm on post game. 16 pitches in the first inning, which is good. 17 second. 10 in the third, 12 in the fourth, and then 7 in the fifth before he came out of the game. Is like you said, 62 pitches, 38 strikes, 6 first pitch strikes to 17 hitters. And to me, that's a good outing. That was good. And he stabilized. Very good communication with Joey Bart behind the plate. I thought they worked well together. You know, they moved inside and outside, which he has to with that sinker-slider combination. He had a nice little changeup going. And, you know, when I saw 62 pitches, I that's what I've been saying all night. You know, Kapler should have come out and just said, "How do you feel? Can you finish this inning for me?" And let Garcia or whoever get a start fresh inning. Because it just he just pulled him out too quick. Now, unless there was something that was said, he threw 34 pitches on Sunday in that outing against Milwaukee, threw 27 strikes. He threw good. Now he jumps up to 62. Was he ramped up before that? We don't know because he was in Arizona. He didn't go to Sacramento. So I brought up some points, Jeff, about it was a hamstring. It wasn't an arm issue. He threw catch. He threw long toss. I just felt he should have went out there and talked to him a little bit more. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it felt like he was throwing well enough to be able to convince the coach to keep him in. And, you know, one thing I've noticed about this, you know, this coaching staff and the front office since they've taken over is it feels like they they're not too big on rehab assignments, and you know, especially with pitchers. I mean, we've seen guys like Alex Cobb come off the injured list, even though he'd miss one or two or maybe even three starts, and he'd go right back into game action without like a rehab start. And I think that was also the case with Jacob Junis. So again, I wonder how much his arm is built up after missing close to about 6 weeks with that hamstring issue. Maybe he's built up to throw 75 pitches. I don't know exactly, but you know, it's one of those things where, you know, you kind of have to read the room, and it felt like Jacob Junis had the ability to at least finish that inning, or at least
so glad you said that. I'm so glad you said read the room, because you have to. I was watching it. You were watching it. Many Giants fans were watching it. I listened to, you know, the post game after. Even Sean Estes said I felt that he could have gone a little further in that game to give a little relief to the bullpen. Even 10 more pitches, he's not going to come out and go, "Oh, my shoulder's killing me, man." There ain't no way he's going to do that. He's going to take the ball and bust his tail to get out of that inning. It was 0-0, Jeff. It wasn't. He wasn't even behind in the game. He was matching up with Merrill Kelly 0-0, and that's what I've, as a pitcher, I'm going against that guy. He's got a no hitter. He's got a perfect game. I'm going to put another zero up because that's how you contend against the opposing pitchers.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like he was kind of going toe-to-toe with Merrill Kelly. And to Kelly's credit, he was throwing really well. And if I were Merrill Kelly – with the way he pitches against the Giants. I find a way to pitch against the Giants a little more. I mean, it feels like he's a borderline Hall of Fame pitcher when he's throwing against the Giants. But, you know, he's also a very good pitcher at the
end
of the day.
He is. When he's spot on like that, like he did, he had nothing down the middle of the plate. Nothing was – it was all in the corners or sinkers coming back on the edge. He threw some great sinkers to Jock Peterson where the ball looked like it was coming on his hip and it was on the inside part of the corner of the plate.
Oh, yeah.
Those are sinkers when you throw them, you're like, they don't even see it coming back because it's such a tight movement. That's the fun stuff as a pitcher, because I sinker slider. When you make pitches like that and you're throwing them and you can put them on a dime on a corner, it is so much fun to watch hitters that can't hit them. And Merrill Kelly, I guarantee he was out there going, you're not going to hit this. I'll throw a changeup. You're not going to hit that changeup. I'm going to throw a little slow breaking ball. You're not going to hit that. When you're on like that, it is so much fun, and he had a blast. He pitched a great game.
Yeah, he really did. And to his credit, you know, he held the Giants to just 3 hits in 8 innings. Yeah. And, you know, they really didn't have too many good swings against him. I know Brandon Belt connected for a couple of pretty deep flyouts. Luis Gonzalez had a couple of hits. Jock Peterson had a bunt hit. But, you know, they didn't really have anything against him. You know, I think Kelly definitely deserves credit. You know, on the other hand, it felt like Junis could have gone a little deeper into the game as well, and he was throwing
balls. Tell you what I loved about Merrill Kelly when he was coming off the mound after Jock Peterson laid the bunt down the last out. He was chirping at him, smiling at him like, you really laid a bunt down on me? I can't believe you did that. I mean, that's the stuff, in-game stuff, where you see him, you know, behind a glove or whatever and then chit-chatting. But he was good. He was really good today. So, okay, I got to ask you, Jeff. This week is really, really meaningful baseball for the Giants and what they're going to do, the trade deadline coming up. Some moves may happen. Some moves may not happen. You're sitting in that general manager's chair right now. What are you doing?
Yeah, it's got to be a tough position to be for anxiety and Scott Harris right now because, you know, the on-field product has to give you the confidence to be, you know, a buyer at the trade deadline. And I'm just not sure at 48 and 48 with how they played, especially over the past couple of months, you know, and considering that they've had a lighter schedule recently, you know, with the exception of playing the Brewers and the Dodgers, but they're mm-hmm. playing teams like the Diamondbacks. They, in June, they played the Royals, the Pirates, the Tigers, mm-hmm. and they just couldn't capitalize on that schedule. So, I mean, it's really a tough position to be in anxiety and Harris's chair right now because I don't know if they have the confidence in the team to be able to go out and be aggressive buyers to go out and get a guy like Chris Bryant like they did last year. You know, with that being said, I mean, there's still 6 playoff spots. So I think they're going to be in a position to maybe kind of tweak the roster a little bit. I've been referring to it as kind of a soft buy where you get a couple of new faces into the organization without giving up, you know, a ton of prospect capital that might, you know, you might just catch lightning in the bottle. But, yeah.
And that's
just,
what they've been doing, though, Jeff. That's exactly what they've been doing. They have been catching some of those lightning in the bottles. And that's one thing that we can say that Farhan does. And he does it with second chances also with players, you know. And the new name came out today, you know, with the Oakland A's about Laureano, the outfielder. That was the new name that came out. Ramon Laureano is a new name that everybody's talking about that could come over in a trade from Oakland to San Francisco to shore up the center field position because of the defense. What do you think of a possibility of a trade for him?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen Ramon Laureano play for the A's for a couple of years now, and you know, he covers a lot of ground out there, but he also has a really good arm. I think he'd immediately have the best arm, maybe close with Austin Slater, but he'd easily have one of the better arms in the Giants organization. You know, with that being said, you know, recent history wouldn't suggest that a Giants A's trade is imminent, just because, you know, they haven't made a whole lot of trades recently. If you go back to 2000, they've made a total of 3 trades. That includes Adam Pettyjohn, Bert Smith, and Sky Bolt. I mean, I just
Sky Bolt. I remember that one.
Yeah, he was traded to the Giants and then back to the A's. So it's actually 4 trades. But you know, I kind of need to see a bigger move happen before. Like, I mean, Ramon Laureano has multiple years of control, so it would take a little bit of prospect capital to make a deal like that happen. And get, considering that it's the Giants and you know, the relationship that the owners have between the Giants and the A's, I think they'd have to be overwhelmed to make a deal like that.
Yeah, and you know, I just pulled up some numbers on him, Jeff. 10 home runs this year, two batting 230, 9 stolen bases, 22 RBIs. But if you look at career numbers, 257, 59 home runs. The bat isn't going to really light you up there. The defense is, I think, exactly what you're saying. The defense to square up center field and be able to be like a Darren Lewis out there, because I still think I've never seen anybody play center field better than Darren Lewis.
Yeah, he was a good one, wasn't he?
And he was real good. I bring up Darren a lot, and people go, really? And I go, man, Darren was that guy. Man, it just seemed like he was there all the time. And I tell you, another one was Angel Pagan was pretty good in center field, too. He made some flashes out there.
Yeah, Angel Pagan and Gregor Blanco, I mean, both of them out there were pretty good. I was watching Matt Cain's perfect game last
weekend.
Oh,
my goodness, what a catch.
Just seeing that play from Blanco, it's like, how do you do that? It's a perfect play, you know. It's the perfect read, the perfect route. But it's funny that you bring up Darren Lewis, because I think – that's like the most recent big trade that the A's and the Giants have had was.
That's another one. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was 32 years ago. So I mean, it feels like if you're looking at Ramon Laureano as a potential trade candidate, I mean, it's been 32 years, I think, since the Giants have made a significant trade with the A's. So.
Well, they got a couple. There's a couple more pieces over there you wouldn't mind grabbing too. You know, if the A's want to start selling some pieces off, there's a nice starting pitcher over there that had a little arm issues, but he wouldn't be bad in orange and black either. It throws about 98 plus.
Yeah, I think Frankie Montas is the you're referring
that's
to.
Our guy. Yeah,
he would help him out pretty nicely, and you know, if you put him with Logan Webb and Carlos Rodon, I mean, that'd be a pretty nice 1-2-3 punch in the playoffs. So that I don't think teams would really want to face.
You're right. You're absolutely right. So let me ask you, I mean, if you're looking, are you going to get another starting pitcher? Do you think they need another starting pitcher? If you start looking at club control, Di Sclafani's still got two more years. He's hurt. Alex Wood's got another year. Of course, Webb's under contract. Rodon's about the only one that you could lose. He could walk out. Do you think you need to add another starting pitcher on the staff?
I mean, it sounded like Far Anxiety kind of nixed that idea last week. But if I'm, you know, if you're asking for my opinion, I think that's one area where they can really make a big move. I know Luis Castillo is going to be available for the Reds, and he would really change the dynamic of that rotation.
Ex-Giant, too.
The question is, yeah, ex-Giant, of course. He was traded by the Giants, and then he was traded by the Miami Marlins twice, oddly enough. But, yeah, I mean, he would really change the dynamic of that, the top of that rotation with Webb and Rodon. So, I mean, I think if you're going to swing big, that'd be the type of move you make. But, you know, it's going to hurt in terms of who you have to give up in terms of prospect capital. You might have to give up one of the top prospects.
Yeah, you might have to. I think there's a lot of clubs, too, Jeff. You hear about Houston, Toronto. Toronto wants to buy everybody. That's Toronto. They're even going after Otani. Yeah, we want Otani. He's not even on trade. We want him anyway. That's how Toronto wants him. And then you also got the Yankees. They're talking about it. So there are some clubs. That's why, you know, you start talking trades and you talk about all the different people that want him. There's 29 other teams that want him too. So, you know, it's going to be how Scott and Farhan goes after the certain players and what they can offer. And it's always, they always do stuff late. You know that? It's like they got Bryant, one of the last trades they made last year. I'd like to see a little bit of movement as this week continues, don't you?
Yeah, it'd be nice. And I think one thing I've learned from this front office is they work pretty quietly. So, while there are going to be rumors connecting the Giants to, you know, this player or that player, they tend to go against the grain. So, you know, it's sometimes the player you least expect is who they'll target. So, you know, just because rumors are out there, it doesn't necessarily mean there's a ton of substance to it, or they might be just kicking the tires.
Yeah. Well, Jeff, I just got corrected about the best center fielder that ever played in a Giants uniform. Willie Mays. Of course, Willie Mays was the best.
How did we miss but that?
That's what I love about the listeners. They know more than I do, and I love that one. And I really appreciate that one. That was a good one there. But, Jeff, thanks again for joining me. I know it's a late Monday night. You're always great to have on, and I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Bill. The pleasure is mine.
Excellent. That was Jeff Young. You can read him on Round the Foghorn. He writes some real good stuff, and, boy, he's got great knowledge of the game. All right, more coming up next on KNBR, the sports leader.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.